address from what we've been talking about so far this weekend.
About the importance of framing a question at the beginning of a meditation session. How that kind of can shape the hour.
Sometimes it can shape the hour, and sometimes it can see you how the hour is being shaped. It can show you how the hour is being shaped by mm-hmm. your unconscious question.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't it?
Yeah.
Either way?
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Very possible.
Yeah. Some people like to do that, work that way very much, and that's a reasonable way to work. Other people don't approach meditation that way. For some people, the meditation exercise itself that you're doing is in itself a valid question.
Mm-hmm.
Nice place for you right here, Morris, if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
The actual exercise that you're doing is in itself already going to move the meditation in a particular way. For myself, I've always found it interesting to explore what the meditation exercise will bring forward before I start asking my own particular questions.
So it
for myself, the meditation exercise that I'm doing is itself a question?
Yes, yeah.
And that was particularly true after I had begun to do some study of the 40 classical meditations of the Theravadin tradition, of what is a book called the Visuddhimagga. And are you comfortable, Wayne? Would you
yes.
rather be against a wall?
No, good here. Thank
right
you.
There? Okay. Hmm? And then was interested, you know, because often in my conversation with people who had met meditation and Buddhism in different ways than I had, some of them not Buddhism, just meditation, I kept running again and again into the idea that there was one right form of meditation, and it was the kind the person, whoever I was talking to, was the kind they were doing. And I talked to this person, and there was one right meditation, and it was the kind they were doing. And I talked to someone over here, and there was one right meditation. It was the kind they were doing. And every one of these people I had great respect for. None of them were lying. And none of them were overly conceited or into, you know, selling their path as the right way to awaken or anything. You understand? They weren't drumming up business. Right? And so then I thought, well, that's really interesting. I wonder why so many people who I have, you know, real respect for their minds and their hearts, how they approach things, I wonder why each of them can think, because, you know, me, I mean, that's exactly the kind of problem I would go, ooh, I can distract myself with this question for at least 10 years. Well, this looks like fun. Probably won't have to do any serious meditation myself for quite a while if I observe this. Never want to miss up a chance to be distracted. So that was very interesting to realize that each one of those people was actually getting very specific results according to that meditation, and that the meditation itself went in different directions. So for me to also to ask a question in a lot of ways became less interesting than to try to understand what different meditations did. My question was meditation itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a technique that I have been particularly interested in. So I really wouldn't be a good person to talk to you about it.
I was thinking of the term question more in what the way you just described it, actually, rather than sitting down and saying my question of the moment is, what are the winning lotto numbers for the next, you know, that kind of thing. The fact that questions arise and then answers come is more kind of thing, which seems to me what you just described.
Mm-hmm. So maybe I misheard your question. Would you be so kind as to repeat it for me?
Well, it seems that some meditations specify at the beginning some kind of a question that's set for sitting. Others seem to be more in your vein of the process itself is the question.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that question always seems to be a part of what meditation is what I find fascinating, and it seems to be something that is really fundamental to whatever meditation is. It seems to include that.
It is true. I mean, a good meditation requires that the mind be questioning and alert and interested. That is not to say that. I mean, there are basically two qualities of consciousness that we have. One quality of consciousness goes for feeling good, and the other quality of consciousness goes for excitement. Does that make sense to you? There's one part of ourselves that always likes to go into new ground, loves to ask questions, you know, sort of is a certain kind of what goes further, what goes further, what goes further, the bliss of continuously moving. And there's another part of the consciousness that really likes the bliss of being totally peaceful. Does that make sense to you? And I think it's very true for all of you here that you have some idea which one you prefer. Don't you think so? You have an idea which one of those two you prefer. Well, you prefer to be peaceful in your idea of peace. I'm not saying absolutely peaceful like Gandhi, but that you will maybe use anger even to create peacefulness, right? You are peaceful in terms of protecting your territory or making sure you got a really good security system, or right? That's one way to be peaceful, isn't it? To establish a perimeter that no one can breach in a certain way that creates a kind of peace, doesn't it?
Halfway ringing right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then another kind of part of the mind. Oh, in one teacher says that you have like the desire for safety, and the desire for new understandings, and they're right at war with each other in a certain way. You get everything nice and safe and peaceful, and then you wonder what's on the other side, what they are doing. So you get all involved with what they are doing, and you go to the camp of they next to you, and then the camp next to the camp, and then the camp next to the camp to the camp, and then you really wish you could just sit down quietly and watch TV. Right? You go back and forth between the two. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
So there are people who tend more toward the wanting to know what they are doing, and there are people who tend to more toward the safety, generally speaking, in life. Would you say that's true as well? And can you identify which one you are? More or less? And can you identify your sense of what the other one will get is useful for?
Yes.
Because you can see that you need both, right? Mm-hmm. And you can you see what it is about the other one that you don't feel comfortable approaching? Because what is it about the one that you use the most that you might have to give up? Does that ring a bell for any of you?
Yes.
Have I just totally lost you? Do you think I'm talking a bunch of gobbledygook? Or are you following me here?
Following.
Huh?
With you.
You lost me.
Lost you? There's a part of your psyche that likes to be safe.
Okay.
There's a part of your psyche that likes to take chances.
Likes to take chances?
Yeah. Okay. That likes to know what's beyond safety. Right? For some people, don't think that safety means safety. For some people, safety can mean... For some people, they feel safe if they're always... climbing cliffs, but to actually sit down in somebody's living room and have tea would be totally dangerous to them. Do you understand me?
Okay.
Yeah, so I think that's where you got confused, isn't it?
For myself, I'm always running.
Yeah, because that's your safety, right?
Okay.
Isn't it?
Yeah, always. That's my
safety. Yeah. And then there, for other people, there is an exploring thing that's really interesting, right? Basically, one of those two you'll be really good at. And maybe I shouldn't have used the word safety there, because it's easy to get it confused, but we want two things. One, we want to be held, we want to be loved, we want to be accepted, and two, we want to go where no man has gone before. And then those two qualities of our consciousness are always there. And maybe safety isn't the right word to use, because for some of us, to continuously go where no man has gone before gives us a sense of safety, right? But our ability to sit still and, you know, pet a cat in front of a fire and be touched, or, you know, meditate or whatever, it's just somehow we just never quite manage it. You know, it's just sort of not done. Do you understand that? So one of those two qualities will become more interesting than the other. The best way, it will become more pronounced than the other in your life, will have more of your talent in it. Right? It will also have your weakness in it, because that part that you don't like of the opposite one, you'll compensate for with your talent. So you make safety out of running around, for example. Right? So often when you do a meditation, the first thing you're going to run across is the question of what it is you're doing with the meditation. Are you looking for something to do, or are you looking for a place to not have to do when you meditate? I mean, that's, to me, that's a really interesting thing to look at. Every day when I sit, one part of what I'm doing is I'm going to see who's home today. Is today somebody who wants to go to grand new worlds, or is today somebody who would like to just, you know, thank you very much, now we'll just put the dimmer switch down a notch. Just go into a little soft concentration here. Yeah, sort of almost jhana, but not quite, because jhana might get too exciting. you know? So that itself is a wonderful question about the practice. Who is sitting? What is it, you know, what is the motive that you have at the moment? Now, I find that a really valuable question.
It could lead a long way, I guess.
I beg your pardon?
I think it could lead a long way. It
can lead a very long way.
So it's not so much the question, it's more the motive. Would you consider those both the same?
I think that's what creates all your questions, are your motives. And what you're trying to do is how to get a great lot of stimulation while being safe, mm-hmm. or how to get safety while involved in a great lot of stimulation. I mean, that's basically all of our motives. We're either going one way or the other. Right? We would like to keep all of our habits and have everybody continue to love us. What did we... I mean, it's not really. I mean, it's not heaven. Wouldn't that just be perfect?
Cake and eat it too.
I'm quite willing to change as long as I don't have to change. So then, if you actually begin to meditate and say you're watching the breath or something like that, and you're actually just, the question is really, who is meditating right now? What is the state? What is the awareness? What is the quality of the mind that is present? There is no more interesting question than that I know of. That is the beginning and the end question. What is arising in space at this moment? That is the beginning question, that's the end question. So for me, there are different ways you can pose, for me, it became clear that if I use this meditation, I could see this aspect of who was here. If I use this meditation, if you do the meditation on the elements, you get into a different quality of the I meditating. If you do a meditation on the breath, you get a different quality of the I meditating. If you do a meditation on loving kindness, on compassion, on sympathetic joy, on equanimity, you get a different quality. If you do meditation on boundless space and on boundless light, you get a different quality. You do meditation on the nature of angels, you get a whole different quality of meditation. You do meditation on the quality of the awakened being's mind, then there's a whole other way. But they're all still like examining in terms of the person who is sitting there too. Who is arising in space? Who is dissolving in space?
Thank you.
There are so many beautiful meditations to do. Now the Tibetan practices, I'm not sure yet, unfortunately. I'm still going to go blah-blah. It's very kind of you to thank me, but I'm still going to keep talking. So just a second. And then I'll quit answering your question, and you'll be thankful for that, for sure. The Tibetan sadhanas, for example, one of the things that is so beautiful about them, if you look at them, the ones that are actually are more than just the thumbnail sketch of the visualization, the ones that are more than just a blessing level practice, they always have somewhere within the very beginning of the meditation, the instruction for the visualization, they always have what the meditation is meant to do. Now, the Cheng Rezi meditation is meant to bring forward the understanding that samsara, the depths of samsara, is no different than compassion. The activity that stirs the depth of samsara is compassion. That's what the Cheng Rezi meditation is meant to do. So you know, if you do this meditation, this is what it's designed to do. The Vajrasattva is to remove the two veils that obscure reality. So you know, if you do that meditation, you're going to find that your views and your emotional states begin to change. You know that. Every one of the meditations has, the Tibetan traditional meditations, every one of them has, at the beginning, a little statement that tells you what that meditation will do, which I think is very civilized. I think that's damn decent of them, you know? That's nice. Well, what do I feel like becoming? Well, let me see. And they actually work. Meditation on Manjushri, which develops discriminating wisdom, can go through a real period of sharpness, but what it will eventually end up in is to understand that the nature of Dharma is to be peaceful. That's what the Meditation on Manjushri does. Makes you understand that the nature of the law, cause and effect, the whole truth of existence is peacefulness. Dharma. Peacefulness. And wouldn't that be an interesting thing to learn? That the actual nature of Dharma, not what you think you are, but what is really true of your being, is peacefulness. That would be an interesting thing to be able to see clearly, wouldn't it? And then against that background comes discrimination. Because there is peacefulness, then one is trusted to be able to make. That's the only way you are trustworthy as a namer, is if the heart is peaceful. So I find that, you know, so many things about the Tibetan system, the Vajrayana system, but particularly the Tibetan system, I find so skillful and so beautiful. So they don't so much write question in as give you the answer in the first very beginning of the meditation and then just throw you into an experience where you can't see that that's the answer at all. You totally forget the answer, you know? And then the next time you read the text, you get the answer right away, and then you get thrown into the experience, you totally forget the answer again. And slowly you become the answer. It's a very beautiful system. Yes.
I haven't had much experience with the brothel deities. I made some acquaintances with the Yamataka. But I find in my lifetime, I can't really get along until I get mad. I can go along and get partially interested, grooving away. I can go into things, but I can't really see the landscape light up. Once I get some anger. I'm not at all skilled at when to do it, but I have a lot of anger still in me. And I go to bed at night and I'm following
Tibetan book of yoga and dreams.
You're supposed to prepare yourself to go into a friendly state. But then later on, as you work through the different letters and different bindus, they hit you with the wrathful deity again. You're not going any further going through this guy. So I don't know whether you can give him a call or not, but I have Alan talking, but I'm not quite sure much of a skillful way to know.
How to work with that?
Know when it's a good time to do it. I'm feeling on the edge of doing something with it.
Doing the wrathful work with
Yamataka.
That? Because you have progressed all through all of the stages up to this? Mm. Haven't you? You have progressed right to this point with this book?
yeah.
with this teaching, then carry on. Yes, continue. Do the work. And does it say Mahakala?
No, yeah, well, it doesn't say
it says a wrathful deity.
Wrathful deity. I have an affection for Mahakala, but I haven't got a son. I've been trying to taste Kala Rinpoche when he was here and the Kanapa, and I could I always missed out by a day by finding Mahakala. But Yamantaka seems to be a pretty good ally.
Yamantaka is a good ally. I would do Yamantaka, that's fine.
I like him on my side. A Yamantaka would do, but...
And you have a sadhana?
Yes.
Okay, so please go ahead with it.
You don't know of any way I can find a Mahakala sadhana?
Oh yeah, I do. I know of many ways, but most of the ways are directly to me that I know. Are you asking me if I could give you a Mahakala
teaching?
Yes. Yes, I'll do that. I'll send it to you. You'll need to write out your address to make sure I have your proper address. You need to do that at the end of the class. Watch my lips. Watching my lips? Yes. Could you hear me?
Yes.
That's what I said.
Can't believe it.
You can't believe it. Ask me again. Yes.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
How did they come up with the different meditations?
They?
The Tibetans.
The Tibetans? A certain number of them were taken from the time of Nagarjuna in... most of Tibetan Buddhism comes from the present day. Tibetan Buddhism comes from the time of Nagarjuna in India, which would be what, 700? Would that be 700 years after the Buddha? Would that
yes,
be sometime?
Yes, after the Buddha. Yes.
700 years after the Buddha, I think. Somewhere in there. And Nagarjuna was a very... there was a university in India that was very famous for Buddhist scholars. And... Nagarjuna was one of the scholars at that time, very, very bright, very profoundly beautiful mind and heart. And there was a lot of quibbling over how many angels danced on the head of the pin at that time, right? So he felt that maybe the essence of what the Buddha had been teaching was lost. So he began, as a scholar, he began tracing back over all of the commentaries and all of the various teachers that had arisen since the time of the Buddha and re-established the teaching of Shunya as a main teaching of Shakyamuni Buddha. And it had begun to be lost more in commentaries and things at that time. So he re-established the power of the teaching of Shunya. And then from that, a lot of Hindu tantric traditions were woven around and deity practices and elemental practices as deities were woven around the concept of Shunya. Concept of Shunya is that there is no inherent self. That's the first stage of understanding. The second stage of understanding is that consciousness which has no legs rides winds which have no eyes. But that consciousness rides winds. Is that good? Okay. And that consciousness itself is boundless, formless, beyond, without taste, beyond definition. Is that clear? And rides winds, or winds ride through it. So big mind is without form, without place, and the Dharma is dancing within it. Dharma.
Dharma.
Cause and effect, basically. All the coming into being's existence and passings away. Continuously dancing, without end, through the void nature. Or, as every sadhana says, spontaneously arising out of the void. And that's what we're doing in every moment. In every moment, spontaneously arising out of the void and spontaneously dissolving out of the void. The radiant energy of the being, patterning, emotional pattern, radiant energy, five main winds, five main patterns. The emotions are no different than the elements. The connection of consciousness with earth creates miserliness. It also creates richness, depending on one's willingness to be open. Right? And so forth. Is that clear? And so forth. And so water creates anger, sharpness, conceptual reality, and also the awareness of mirror-like wisdom. All beings are the Buddha, our places are Nirvana, all sounds are the divine sound. Depending on how consciousness is framed, is using, how those winds are used, and how consciousness, how the motive of the observer, depending on the motive of the observer. Fire is either the continuous desire to be admired, the continuous wanting to have something that makes you feel good. The person who goes along skimming cream off of every milk bottle and just keeps moving along. The person who loves to fall in love regularly but can't sneak around for the next morning. Right? The person who cannot tolerate being rejected. Does this make sense to you? Fire, because fire is like continuously attracted to form, right? And then as it passes to the next form, right? The power of fire is that it transforms form.
Transforms.
It is transcendent. It is in love that transcendence happens, in that sense of warm embrace, that transcendence happens, in allowing oneself to be present and touched, that everything changes. Right? But if you only want the touch to go one way, then that's negative fire. Right?
It's negative what?
Fire.
Fire.
And the wind, how did I get caught in this detail? This is very interesting to you, so I'll keep going. I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Okay, and air. Air finds it really difficult to sit still. Air is continuously going somewhere else, continuously moving on, continuously wanting to know everything that's about to happen, the newest news, the greatest news, the biggest story, where are we going next? That's air. and the feeling of about to be trapped, so not wanting anybody to, you know, wanting to know what everybody else is doing before anybody knows what they're doing. That's air. Doesn't like anyone to know what they're thinking, feeling, touching, tasting, smelling. Would rather know what everybody else is thinking. Gets paranoid. That's air. The beautiful of air, beauty of air is understanding when there isn't that kind of holding to oneself, is the understanding of all activity is the wisdom of accomplishment of Buddha nature. All activity is the wisdom of accomplishment of Buddha nature. When the competition is out of it, it's just one big party of awakening. Is that good? How do I get into this? So there are these five elements. Space, you know how sometimes you don't feel like you're in a good space? Or you're arising in a space that feels compressed and heavy and, right? Or you're in a really good space. The actual space you're in from Buddhist teaching, it extends approximately 3,000 miles. The space that you can actually feel around you, sense in your spatial dimension.
How many miles?
3,000.
Oh,
but the likelihood of your being aware of your space like that is very limited. Usually we have a sense of our space maybe not much behind us at all, right? And maybe about 3 feet in front of us. And one of the things that you'll find a lot talked about space today, because people call your sense of space a boundary. And there's a place where you feel comfortable with space and where you don't. I remember my beloved teacher Namgyal Rinpoche in the early days of our being together, he used to play around with our boundaries. Like you'd come in to do a meditation report and he'd be in a room like almost as big as this and there would be nobody else in the room and he'd be sitting at one end of the room and the cushion for you would be sitting like two-thirds the way down, and I'd come in and say, oh, good afternoon. So I'd pick up the cushion and start moving and say, put it back. Okay, yeah, put it, and I'd come and sit here. Sit on the cushion. And just watching. You know, what your sense of what space you wanted to create, you know, what space I wanted to create a space between us. It's very interesting talking to groups of people. When you're talking, say, to 300, 400, 500 people, watching space, and watching how you connect with people in the back or people in the front. That what you are starting to refer to today as boundary or boundary issues would in the Tibetan tradition or in any of the Buddhist traditions of meditation on the elements be referred to as awareness of space. You have a lot more awareness of the space in front of you than the space behind you, don't you? Why? Is there no space behind you? Well, it's different, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You just start to be aware of the space behind you. It's quite different, isn't it? How does your mind, felt sense of the mind, arise? Does it feel different? Huh? What about behind you? What about beneath you? What about space beneath you? Pay attention to that feeling. Oh, that's different again, isn't it? Some of you get nothing at all? Some of you have a very distinct thing on one side. Okay. And we're continuously arising in space. And some of our space, we've got the lights out. So anyway, what I was trying to say, which I got into saying very, very badly, is that there is shunya, there is shunya, which Nagarjuna recalled very clearly. And then from continuously arising in space, there are these dancing energies, these motive energies, motivations, energies, seeds of karma, looking for a place to happen, basically arising in the form of the five winds. And in fact, there is no inherent self. There are only seeds of karma, radiant energy, dancing in space, coming into being, existing, passing away, and no inherent self. And the mind that is capable of identifying that switching the identity from a little split off, splinter, partial manifestation that is impermanent to something that is, in fact, unborn, uncreated. Then there is some ability to say that there is wisdom. So that all the Tibetan meditations basically formed around the beginning. Space, statement of how of the from the space arises the blissful gifts of the awakening mind. Because that's all that does arise for any of us, all of us here in life. All that we are doing, whatever we are doing, is taking us to awakening. There is no other place to go. All of your experiences, all of your cause and effect, everything that you are doing will only go to satisfaction. Because that's how we're made. No, there is no other place to go except to total liberation. It's just a matter of how long we want to play silly buggers. And silly buggers can be fun. But it does get boring at a certain point, doesn't it? And so then the consciousness is willing to go deeper back into seeing that liberation is the aim and the result. So that's how all the meditations start. And then it says, okay, so now taking the energy, say mostly of fire, and using this aspect of the fire energy and shaping it just this way, and this becomes chin-raising. This becomes how compassion could be used this way. Or taking this aspect of earth and shaping it this way and moving it that way, and this can become the beautiful teaching of Zambala, can be used this way. So all the different deities arise by taking the energy, radiant energy of cause and effect, for as it's moving toward enlightenment, and practicing it so that you learn how to do it better. Okay? Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. When you were talking about the space behind you, when I think of the space behind me, it would become very uncomfortable. I'd almost feel like there was somebody looking at my back.
So was that true when you were, you know, in this lifetime, or was it probably this lifetime? Was there a sense that you were being watched a lot?
Not that I can recall.
But you just recalled something.
Yeah, I just recalled. Now I don't know where it comes from. It just feels.
So whatever that is, then you see that's like one way of arising in space that you habitually do, and you could actually check that out and say, and there is also another way of arising in space. So like as long as you're ignorant of that, that will always be happening. So whenever you arise in space, there will be this sense of being watched, uncomfortably being watched.
Change that?
I don't know. If you're not uncomfortably being watched, then do you change?
What?
If you are uncomfortably being watched,
no.
You act one way, right? If you're not uncomfortably being watched, do you act a different way?
I don't know. It's a new experience.
Is it?
Okay. It's a new experience to my mind at this moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that your discovery of it is new.
Yeah, absolutely discovery of it.
But in terms of your life, if you are in a circumstance driving down this, do you drive?
Yeah.
Yes. Have you ever driven on a road in Edmonton? Yes. Have you ever driven on a road in Edmonton and looked in your rear view mirror and seen a police car behind you? And when you were driving along, was your driving different than when that police car changed? Was your attitude different? Was your sense of yourself different?
Yeah, very
yeah, okay. So that's the answer to my question, isn't it?
That's a good example. Really good example.
That's the answer, isn't it? So yes, it does change, doesn't it? You do change by that. So you could practice having a space where a bunch of angels were telling you how wonderful you were behind them.
Oh, okay.
You could practice that.
Yeah, yeah.
And see if you drove differently. Yeah. Drove this vehicle differently. You can practice it a lot of ways.
Putting the positive behind it rather than...
Yeah, and then putting the neutral. You know? And the same below you. You know, that's the space you're in. And we are all in some kind of space. And if you actually pay attention to the space you're in, there's probably a lot of ghosts around.
Just intrigued me, that little flash in example of the police car. It just seems that we have here an archetypal symbol. It's almost like an archetype. You know, how car triggers up a whole bunch of associations that aren't necessarily to do with that Edmonton car. But going back millennium. So everybody feels it. Whether they've done anything nasty last week or not.
And that's the space. There is no inherent self, but there are all these energies of cause and effect dancing in them. And they are radiant energies, and they are powerful. Don't fix the archetype. Become aware of the traces of energy. Mm-hmm. They're dancing, they're moving. Mm-hmm. Inner space, outer space. Don't fix them. There is no permanent place. There's no safety in fixing. Cause and effect dancing is called Sambhogakaya, bliss body.
or piece in.
You're going to quote a book to?
Well, it won't go away.
It won't go away. Okay.
It's a.
Okay.
Like a bit of
a, I'm at your mercy with that.
White. water is a color of white, right?
Yeah.
But there's a statement somewhere that you can change the white back to a color. I work white back to a water.
I beg your pardon?
The color of water is white.
Right.
Apparently, according to that.
In the Tibetan symbolism, usually water is white.
Yeah.
That's right.
By that you can turn the white back into water. White water is white and it's in a certain condition. But I made a statement that I found very strange to turn white into water.
Mm-hmm. And what
I don't know what to make of that.
Oh good.
I use this as a message this nice just walk on, I don't know what they're talking about.
I don't either, because I'm not reading that book, and I have no idea. And, you know, quoting one line out of a book to someone else in the middle of a class where other people are there is not exactly the way to find out what it might mean.
Well,
I mean, certainly one of the qualities of water is its ability to reflect perfectly, right? And another one of the qualities of water is its ability to become totally ice, right?
Ice, right.
Yeah. Where it reflects imperfectly, doesn't it?
Right. Reflects imperfectly. Yeah.
And where nothing can come in,
right?
And it looks quite white, actually, quite often, frozen water, doesn't it? But I don't know, because you're the one who read the book, not me. Would you like to borrow my fig leaf? It's good, isn't it? This is a well-dressed Cecil. My mother is saying, finally! She's covering it up. Oh, dear. Yes.
When you're meditating, and...
Me or you?
Me. When I'm meditating.
Yes.
And focusing... on the breath.
Yes.
And then things arise.
Yes.
And you try and maintain focus on maintain focus on the breath. How does one acknowledge the arising?
You don't have to.
Without being caught.
You don't have to. You just have to maintain your awareness of the breath. Your mind has two particular ways of working. One of the ways of working is just focuses directly on, the other way picks up peripheral data. You don't have to switch your focusing mind to pick up data. It's very much like with your eyes. You're looking at me right now, right? Are you aware of without looking directly at her, were you aware of Francine turning her head towards you a moment ago? No, look at me. Look at me. Thank you. Francine, turn your head.
Yes.
How were you aware of that? Turn your head again, Francine. How come you saw that? Do you have to make special note of it? Do you have to change your focus here? In fact, you can keep your focus very intensely here. And you don't miss a thing. You didn't miss Wayne turning his head. Brad, wave your hand. Well, any problem? That's the same with the mind. What happens is that you start to get interested in.
Oh, okay.
So you go. And then pretty soon you're right?
Yeah, there are some people that do a lot of drugs, you can see them doing it. That's happening.
It's true. Yeah?
So does that mean that the focusing mind gets kind of taken moved there, and now the focusing mind is there and not where you originally wanted to, if you got allowed?
Yeah, exactly. You're able to see everything that arises as a subplot without any strain whatsoever. It's that you wonder whether that's something worth getting, that you go fishing. You just take a little quick look. Right? Isn't that what it feels like? And if you relax a little more, you can get more data from the peripheral mind. Just relax your focus without shifting it. You'll get more data from there, but then go back to this focus, because in that softening, you might just drift off. But stay here, because what you want to do is, if there is an arising to the mind's eye, you don't want it to come around at the edges and tempt you. You're training yourself to hold the consciousness steady so that when the mind's eye begins to produce phenomena, it will do it right front and center. Not do a little striptease off to the side when you're like... Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
There's nothing that important that's going to happen over there. This is where you want it. You're setting up center stage and you stick to your stage direction. Is that useful?
Very much so.
Because in fact, one of the things you're teaching yourself to do is teaching your mind how to work with efficiency and power. So that if you're curious about something, like for example, why behind you there is a feeling of a police car, you can hold that feeling. You can sit there, watch the breath, then hold that feeling just for a moment, then drop it and watch the breath. And somewhere in the process of the whole meditation, you will get the entire story. If not within 3 days, it will all just come to you because you've asked and you let go of it. So you've given it to the steno pool and the, you know.
But the question was form, front, center.
The form question is here, and then you drop it. And then somewhere here, you'll just, somehow it will come. Oh, and by the way, ta-da-da-da. Great, fine, thank you. Whereas if you keep thinking that it's going to be somewhere else, it will be. Maybe you don't really even particularly have to pose the question in meditation or look for the answer there when you have a question. it is posed. And when you are sitting, you know, it will be explored. Really, my experience of that is if I really want to know something, I just have to focus on it. And then either I will understand it or data will start coming. Somebody will hand me this, somebody will hand me that. Someone will invite me to hear this teacher, and this teacher will be doing a whole initiation and teaching on this. You know? This realm in which we dwell in the Tibetan tradition is called Djembu. Djembu. Djembu is the realm of the wish-fulfilling tree, of the tree with this fruit on it. That is to say, this is the realm where fruits come. Humans, the human life is a life where you get what you're asking for. So it could be you're not paying attention to what you're asking for if you don't like what you're getting. Or you think you're asking. Very often, isn't it true, very often we're talking to someone and we think we're saying one thing and they hear something quite different. Isn't that true? So maybe that what we think we're asking for is not actually what we're asking for. But this is the realm of ask a question and you get an answer. And I really think that's true. I really think that humans have great power in this life. That you get exactly what you're asking for in a certain kind of way. A human lifetime is a great blessing. That's what the Tibetans call this realm, Djembu. And its great symbol is the tree with fruit. All this fruit coming continuously, the fruits continuously falling off in our laps. That's interesting, isn't it? How are you doing?
So the arising can be sort of like related to it as fruit too, no? So all we have to do is have lunch.
That's right. Eat what is coming to you. But you shouldn't be too picky of an eater. Some of us are very picky eaters.
What's that?
Some of us are very picky eaters. Right? Can't eat this, can't eat that. Oh, I didn't think that was part of the menu. Right?
I didn't order that.
I didn't order it.
I don't think. Or can't remember.
Can't remember that. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
The other night you mentioned in the 60s, I think on Thursday, that there was the discovery of the reality, the whole God thing.
Alternate.
Yeah. And now we have right now what's called politics. And I'm just wondering if you could sort of...
Did I say that?
Yeah, some of that effect.
I said now we've got politics?
Yeah, some of that effect, I think.
Did I?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
Something in that vein.
Yeah, did you see it? Did that hear it?
Yeah, it's in that vein. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's...
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I think that that was a very profound time, the 60s, that there was a real sense in many ways that the power that we assumed was the power was no longer the power, that, you know, reality had many possible perceptions, and protest became very powerful, you know. There were a lot of very great reasons why that happened. I mean, certainly people like Gandhi, and, you know, there was a lot of lead up, the whole women's suffrage movement, and many, many things created the possibility for those questions to arise. Does that make sense to you? And so then there was something almost like a bursting wide open, and anything is possible in a certain way. And very much like the internet today, you know, and then all the pornography started and all the bad drug use, right? Because anything is possible. Is that true?
Yeah.
And so then a sort of a clamping down on that, a fear of the anything that can happen. And then I think yesterday, Thursday, what I was talking about was then the need to control everything in a different way, but a different quality of control. So a lot of the politics that we have now is a certain amount of it is staged. Right?
Well, that's not staged. And
staged?
Well, that's, I'm not sure what you mean.
Do you think it will be long before we have private hospitals in Alberta?
Well, that's I don't know. I mean, it could be either way.
Do you think it will be long? Why don't you think it will be long?
Just the nature of the political mind and the will that's out there right now. Privatizes the way thought is going these days. It's got to end.
Do you understand what I'm saying when I'm asking you that question?
There's a mask. There's one thing, but then behind that there's something else.
Yeah.
There's a clear motivation. There's one thing's being presented, but behind that there's something else.
Yeah.
Okay. That's to me. I understand that. Yeah.
So that there is a very definite idea of there's a very definite idea of how things are going to go, and it's already very clear. The writing is on the wall, but no one speaks about it openly. So what you've got is you've got a politics that is not run. See, what happened from the 60s was the possibility of an alternative reality. So now what's happening in the 90s is the Truman Show.
I didn't see the movie, but anyway.
Did you hear the plot of it? Neither did I see it.
Very vaguely, but so no, I
yeah, where there's a whole a manufactured reality. If there are alternative realities, now let us manufacture a reality. So here is a McDonald's reality. You know, this is greatest number served reality. Right?
Yeah.
This is the greatest number served reality. It seems to me very clear that once you have a greatest number served reality, once you have a mega reality that's being sold, complete with t-shirts and, you know, packaging deals and so forth, right? A major in entertainment industry called government. It's true? Do you agree that's true?
Major industry called government?
Yeah. Don't you think that television... There are two channels or one channel that is dedicated only to the newest, latest breaking news from politics?
It's CP.
Is that CNN? And there's a Canadian CBC?
CTV. There's CTV, and there's the CPAC.
Yeah, but there are two cable channels that are dedicated to politics.
Well, news, yeah. Okay, sorry.
What's the difference?
Okay, right.
Isn't that what the news ends up being, mostly?
Yeah, okay.
A story about what's happening in politics and so forth. So that means something has to happen in politics, doesn't it? So now you have to have a manufactured story. Like news, politics cannot actually be a considered debate. It has to have drama.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So that having understood in the 60s that there are alternative realities as a culture, not individually, but as a culture. And then in the 70s, seeing that alternative reality being a little bit dangerous. And then in the 80s, wanting everybody to have a good time and, you know, right? What's true? 80s? Mm-hmm. I think so. And now in the 90s, trying to figure out, be careful, because now we've all had a good time and the main population is dangerous unless we keep it sedated. Let's create a reality that we all agree to believe in. So we all, as Canadians, agree to believe that we like socialized medicine, don't we? And we are slowly being edged into privatized medicine, aren't we? Isn't that curious? Don't you find that curious? It's very curious. Well, yeah, okay.
So, what?
Okay.
Yes?
So they keep putting it in the news to make it a forethought, a thought in our head as well. It's a created thing.
With
the healthcare.
Maybe yes and maybe no. That to me is less interesting than like in a certain way, that's less interesting to me than watching how a whole population is willing to question what is the meaning of life and then is willing to not question because it's too frightening.
Because it's too...
too frightening.
Oh. Yeah.
And I think at the moment we are too frightened and so we would rather hold on to our ideals but be victims of the way things are. Mm-hmm. We would like to get lost in a system but it not be our fault. That feels to me like the reality as a group that we are working with at the moment. Do you understand me?
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing about that is if we decide that as a group, it will mean that it will free individuals to no longer become part of the group because some of us don't feel that way. And yin-yang is true. When there is a great movement, there are many small movements going the opposite direction within it. Mm-hmm. It would be quite marvelous for the people in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, to rebuild a Mongolian monastery in Mongolia, wouldn't it? I mean, isn't that just about as socialist as we can be? Talk about global socialism. Huh? It's somehow quite delicious, isn't it? Yes. I think it is. And don't you think so?
Mm-hmm.
It has a price. Smack to it. Just has a kind of a je ne sais quoi. What a little spark of alternative reality. And the idea isn't only to wake up, but to wake up with a compassionate heart. To do this for all the beings who are afraid. Because people are afraid to ask, what is reality? You are afraid. You are afraid. You are afraid. I am afraid. The Buddha said the hair on his head and his neck stood on end when he awakened. I believe that. And then after that he said, ah, I have found you, O builder. There's no need to feel contempt for the people who want a reality manufactured where they can hold on to their ideals while they watch the ideals sadly sinking in the West. You know? You don't have to feel contempt for that. You have to feel, yes, I understand, and as much as I am able, I would like to launch a new idea. Because there are alternative realities. I always believe, at least, we always had to believe, what, at least three, is it three? Three impossible things before breakfast. You've read your Alice, haven't you? Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. Is it the White Queen is saying to Alice, you know, after all, I am just exactly 576. Do you believe that? No, I don't. Oh, don't you? Try. I'll tell you what. Put your feet together and hold your fists really tight and try. There. Can you believe it now? Oh, no. Oh, we always had to believe at least three impossible things before breakfast. Good training. Good training. This is so beautiful. You know, that's so beautiful. Because what you believe now is only based on your own experience. People who, for example, you know, suddenly have a tragedy happen to them, all their beliefs change. And yet they can read tragedies about someone else every day of their lives and never have their beliefs questioned. Now, isn't that curious? Does that mean the other people aren't real? Are the other people not real? But it's just impossible for that person to think of them as real. It might be good to be able to believe three impossible things before breakfast. Believe in the impossible truth that everybody in this room desires their next breath just as much as you do. Oh my God! That much alive? Could Pat really be that real? Yes! That's a pretty interesting impossible belief, isn't it? Imagine that everyone around you wants to be loved totally just as much as you do. That's pretty impossible to believe, too, isn't it? I mean, look at the way they act. And the third impossible belief that I think would be good to work with is imagine that you don't know anything. That's a really good impossible belief. Any other questions, answers, comments, and complaints? We've sort of been ranging all over tonight. It's a good question and answer night. The Examiner. It's called The Examiner. Oh, it's all about insight.
Anyone who considers meditation now is going to close their eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people may tell me I'm a little cuckoo of my heart and soul, or telling me I'm doing right, says Jones, who wasn't into anything holistic before the diagnostic. That's good. Wasn't into anything holistic. Something with my sense of humor one of these days. I know I'll make it into a politician. Did that satisfy you what I said about that? About politics, Wayne?
Yeah.
There was something in the paper that connection with the website, it's impossible, totally impossible for anyone to respond to the number of stimuli coming at us. Okay. And there's a whole kind of turning your head and just going for fun, entertainment, distraction. Because to select out of the bombardment of stimuli, your system isn't capable of addressing the significance of any of it. So Peter Tapreis, economist, was speaking about the websites and the internet, and said, it's costing you something. And all it's costing you is your attention. To have the intuition to know what is significant, to listen to the still small voices, there's a danger because it's being so flooded. So, what can you trust? And this exposed that Howard Sanderson had a picture of Bill Clinton on the weekend paper, the Globe and the New Toronto paper, of Clinton just beaming with happiness with his arm around another senator, female senator, quite an attractive looking dish. And he's very happy there. The thing is, there's a whole agreement now of everything's okay as long as the economy is spiraling or keeping us distracted. Don't for God's sake get into what's really going on. So Clinton's a good figure because he's having a ball.
And what's the point of this? That pleasure is a large motivator when one loses sense of priority?
Yeah,
is
yeah,
that what you're
yeah,
saying?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, sure it is. Or for some people, morbidity. Or for some people,
yeah.
You know, or for some people, winning competition.
Yeah.
Or for some people, just sleep. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we do many things in samsara. We do many things in samsara. It's no more worse, no more or less worse than it ever was, Morris. I know that you and I differ remarkably on this point, and because I'm the one who's giving the class, I'm going to have a louder voice for the moment. But as soon as you're giving this class, you're welcome to have your louder voice. Samsara doesn't have to get deeper. Samsara is samsara. It is lostness, blind wandering. Whether it's blind wandering for pleasure, or blind wandering for pain, or blind wandering for the think that you're about to get something, or blind wandering for guilt, is not important. We'll do them all at some time or other. It isn't a question of whether this arrow is worse than that arrow, or whether the arrow that kills somebody today is 20 times more dangerous than the arrow that killed somebody 500 years ago. There is no value in talking about greater or lesser potency of death, or of greater or lesser potency of samsara. From my point of view, there is only one thing to do. Practice kindness. Don't scare yourself. And wake up. Don't scare yourself, because you're already, you know, running in circles. See what you can do. Don't keep congratulating yourself by how much you can't do. It's not, no point. So no, don't go there. And now there's a gold light in your heart. I'm taking my ball and going home. And the light spreads right through your body. In all directions, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. That is above, below, in front, behind! That is above, below. Above,
below!
And just be here. You know? Don't go all holy or close your eyes. Just be here. Just feel that gold light all around you. It spreads out through from this room, throughout all of Edmonton, just pours out in the universe in all directions. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, of speech, or of mind, the light just washes it, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you.